Hello, dreamers, and welcome to the first campaign of Wishing on a Die, Campaign 1, Seraph Syndrome. I'm your host, Danny, also the DM. I'm joined by my two lovely co-hosts.
Hello, I am Noelle.
Hi, I'm Tiny.
And we are going to get right in to the first session. All right. Rallern, a world that has survived numerous climactic events. A myriad of tragedies have left the land ragged and torn. However, the people of this jewel-like world have persevered all of these life-endangering events. The freshest wound upon the world has brought forth its longest threat. The Demon Lord Duvarg. His reign nearly brought all humanoids to their knees. But little over a century ago, a young group of heroes picked up the rubble of this world and set it forth on the right path. The saviors of this world bathed in golden light, vanquished the threat while uniting nations. 5 years after the peace, Star kissed the land. 5 years after, the world began to tremble as the heavens gleamed gold, shimmering like a graceful cosmic dance. Then, the world learned a new threat. In 10 PD, post-death, post-Duvarg, the syndrome of Seraphs overtook the land. A little over a century after the fall of Duvarg, that is when this new tale begins, one written in a letter of blood. We pan over an ultramarine ocean, spilling into herself, as waves tumble and engulf themselves as sea foam tumultuously scatters across her surface. We trace along the ocean surface, beneath this monochromatic gray sky. Hiding the sun with the clouds, layered atop each other, barely letting a beam through. Between the erratic sprays of sea foam, an island fades into view. Through the haze of distance, a lush paradise, groomed and well-maintained. Spiraling through the vine-laced archways, we follow the back of a figure dressed in all white, with a golden-trimmed coat. This masculine figure with a broad back proceeds into these hallowed halls. The silvery light of the gloomy sky lighting his side. White hair flows from his head as he progresses up the stairs. And walking straight forwards through these halls, lined with paintings of various people clad in white, he stops in front of the door, adjusts his collar, and with a quick knock, and a small moment after, he walks into the room that has windows in through the furthest walls. Mosaic windows bearing the picture of three people allow prismatic light to flood the room with a myriad of colors. The man's boots strut along the carpet, with each step letting a muffled sound through the echoing room, lined with bookshelves and resonating within the chandeliers above. You see him stop at a desk, with a figure sitting behind it.
Mistress Yvain, we have news of a possible cure. Shall we send our troops?
And you see, after a short breath, this woman turns in her chair to face the man. She unfurls a map atop the desk. The man firmly plants a gloved finger to a massive continent on the yellowed papyrus.
Any chance we have to take down the disease, we shall take. Send over three of our best. It is rather messy and nay.
And she plants a chrome chess piece across the mass of land. As it makes its way onto the paper, we see as it breaks through the other side. Metal slides through the paper and reveals glimmering light through a pinhole. With a crinkle of paper, a map of the stars has been etched out. Noelle, Would you like to describe your character as you finish the map of the stars?
All right. You see a tall, pale astral elf. She has long hair that fades from white to blue, curling at the ends and glimmering with starlight. The tips of her ears, lips, and eyelids are tinted blue, and she has light purple eyes. She wears a light purple silk dress that drapes over her body, covered with the same starlight as her hair, and she has elegant silver jewelry bearing the symbol of stars.
And as you finish the star map, what do you do?
Today I was going to deliver a gift, right?
Absolutely. Your mother and father have prepared a list of tasks. They've given this to you before they move the caravans and the teepees.
Okay, I look at the list.
You unfurl the paper, and you see that they have asked you to fill the canteens with fresh water. Bring along Versailles if you want. Make sure to pack up your teepee. Catch some more fresh fish for our journey. And collect and deliver the farewell gifts to Ybel and Ardell. And you would know this to be a tradition.
So, fill the canteens with water. That's the first task.
Absolutely.
All right. I'll go grab Versailles.
All right. You head over to your parents' teepee, your family's set of teepees. They're just these cloth teepees that have an oblong shape. They have pillars made of sticks that extrude towards the middle and act as ventilation and support. These cloth teepees are covered in nearby foliage, leaves and vines that are bundled up. The interior has swaths of cloth that hang from the bundles of sticks, and all of them are woven with tapestries of the starry night skies, with small gemstones in the place of the stars. And there are some basic amenities in here, but you already know what there is. This is your home, after all. And you walk up to Versailles. And Versailles is currently meditating in his own section, his own room.
His own room? Like, is there, like, something separating it? Or can I just see him?
There are... Basically, what your family's teepee looks like, since you are a rather big family, there are... it's kind of like one middling giant cloth tent, and then three offshoots, one for your parents, one for you, and one for your brother, Versailles.
I kind of peek in. I just go, oh, Versailles.
Oh, you. Hi, Stella. What's up?
You. Well, do you want to help me fill the canteens?
And I knew you were going to ask. Seeing the future's hard work sometimes.
And he smiles a little bit cheekily.
Well, does the future say you will help me or not?
Let me consult again. Just give me a bit in bed.
Really now?
Not really now. You know Mother and Father have already gotten on me for this. All right, I'm coming to help.
Yay, good.
And you see as Versailles stands up, and he walks out with you, his hair just as curled into tight princess curls just as yours. And... he walks out, throwing over an off-shoulder robe that is speckled with stars.
Oh, I don't know why, but I feel a little nervous.
Well, it's a big day after all.
It is. the first gift I'll ever be delivering.
Absolutely. It's a shame to see you, Balinor Bell, go. But it is what we have to do to survive.
Yes. I hope their last night will be a good one, at least. That's all we can hope for.
Versailles nods and grabs some canteens. He's holding them in a bundle made with twine and leather. And he walks with you over to the riverside. As you guys walk over to the river, you are in a peaceful meadow. There are dozens of flowers that bloom a myriad of colors, speckling the landscape. Grasses blowing in the wind. The moonlight is shining down upon the land. As clouds dot the skies and catch the blue moonlight, you see the river meandering as it always has, as it always will, trickling down and sounding like a rushing torrent. You guys move over, and you are able to start filling the canteens, bit by bit, with water. Is there anything you want to talk to Versailles about?
Does your future say anything about that prophecy?
Nothing more than Father's already told you.
Still nothing.
Well, either way, can't tell you.
Oh, well, it was worth a shot.
I'll give you the same answer Dad always does. Stop asking.
You know, I can't help it.
You see, as Versailles has had his eyes closed pretty much the entire conversation, and as you guys have been walking, but he opens them to get a look at your face, and you see that his eyes are filled with a luminous amount of stars. It's as if they overtake the entire section of his iris.
Knowing the future isn't
the
all.
Curse.
Maybe you can read the future. Damn. You beat me to it.
Well, I would say a curse because I'm going to keep asking questions, but.
No, oh, absolutely a curse because of your accursed questions. I swear. You wouldn't stop asking Dad about how your future husband looked.
Well, you know, I have my priorities.
You don't have straight priorities, that's for sure. Have a whole prophecy about you and you're worried about a man. You're lucky you got that answer out of him.
Hey. I can think about multiple things at once.
Sure. I so believe you.
What? I'm the one who asked about it first.
Yeah.
You say Versailles gives you a little bit of a smile, and you guys finish filling the canteens to the brim. And as the stars twinkle gently in the sky, and you finish your first task, you see Versailles loads them into the wagons that have been sitting around and forming a makeshift wall around the slice of nature you guys have taken to live in.
All right. And my next task was...
make sure to pack up your belongings. It was the second one.
Okay, pack up belongings. Easy, I can do that.
Stella, you dutifully rush off and start to pack up your belongings into some bags, and later on, breaking down the teepees and getting ready for travel. But as you begin to pack up your belongings, is there anything of note that you hold dear and onto your person?
Anything of note? I'd say something me and my mom have made together.
You look down at a piece of fabric. It is woven in two distinct halves. One of them with what I can only describe as a distinct, really, really distinct lack of skill and tiny little blood drops and really bad sewing. And then the other half, an elegant tapestry portraying the universe. This was your first ever.
Oh, yes, I remember this. All of the bandages.
And then right next to that one, you see one that shows a true testament to your skills and talent. You have grown into a master weaver, and you look down at this, and you see all of the beauty that you have sown from the night skies that you have visited across Rallern.
I truly have grown into my name, so to speak.
You see Versailles leans across the frame of your tent and goes, lucky you are.
Lucky I am.
Yes, you're good at that. I've always wanted to sew clothes.
Well, it's never too late to keep trying.
You already know what happens. Mother's banned me from it.
Stella, you recall the time where Versailles sewed a piece of cloth onto his skin and was panicking really hard.
How?
In your mother's word, he is completely and utterly talentless.
Oh my god. Well, we both have our things to be envious of, I suppose.
Truly.
Versailles moves over to his own tent to begin packing up his own belongings. And as you finish packing up yours and looking and treasuring your objects, you move on to the next? Or do you have anything else you want to do here?
I think that's all I'd like to do for now.
All right.
I'll just move on to the next thing.
All right. And the last subject for you is to go capture some fresh fish to haul for your journey.
All right. I can go back to that same river as before.
You load up your belongings on the way there, dropping them in the wagon, and you move over to the river once more. You find yourself there, in front of the rushing rapids yet again, and with a trusty little fishing rod.
Yes, fishing.
Your favorite minigame.
This is gaming.
Go ahead and roll me a survival check.
All right. Oh, my goodness. That's a dirty 20.
A dirty 20? Okay. With a dirty 20, you skillfully catch the fish that you needed. You spend some time sitting there under the night sky, your rod bobbing up and down in the water. As you sit there, admiring the scenery around you, waiting for a tug, you reel in a couple of sizable fish. You notice that some of them have begun to seraphize, but that is no matter to you. Their scales turning white around the gills, or their eyes reflecting a deep, deep amber gold.
All right, that should be good.
As you finish collecting the fish, putting them into a small little basket with salt in it, preserving them, you move over to your last task. You pick up the gifts that are meant for Ardell and Yubel. Ardell and Yubel. And you begin to move over to their teepee, holding it. What are you bringing for them? The entire village has given you small gifts and trinkets, stuff for them to hold on to before you say goodbye.
I think I would give them a little tapestry, one that I worked really hard to perfect, and I think I would also give them a little paper with a poem written on it.
You bring a poem with words scribed on it from your heart. And you bring them a tapestry, one of the ones that you've worked your hardest on. Would you say it's one of a unique sky that you've seen along your journey?
Yes, I would say so.
You bring them one with gentle rubies or red gemstones inlaid on it. It gleams the cloth a violet, mixed in with roaring reds and brilliant yellows. You folded it up, and you're bringing it to them. The sky of fire. And as you bring it to them, you bring it over to their teepee. And are you visiting anyone before this? Or are you just going straight to them?
I think I'm going to go straight to them.
You bring it straight to them. The first time you've ever offered a gift. The first time ever. And Stella knows the meaning behind these gifts. Or does she simply think that this is saying goodbye?
I think she would know the meaning now, at this stage in life.
You move to the tent. What emotion sets in your heart?
I think just a sense of sadness, but I think she would just try to keep a happy face on.
With a mournful feeling bleeding deep in your chest. With a fake smile strewn across your face. Or a smile that you're trying to show is real. Mm-hmm. You walk over to the tent. And you would know that Ardell and Yubel, they are lovers. They are intertwined, their hearts one. You walk over to their tent, one singular large teepee. You see orange lights flickering within, a gentle flame dancing behind the cloth.
I look into the tent.
You move the cloth in front of the doorway. Flame burning within. A small fire held within a lantern, flickering across the floors, holding each other in each other's arms. You see Yubel and Ardell. You see Yubel, an older astral elf, reaching their later years. Their hair is long and white, and has been that way for as long as you can remember. They have a darker complexion that is lined and decorated with golden cracks. Golden eyes laced with light shine within their black sclera, angled down and looking at their lover. They wear robes that look like they are aligned with fire itself, a ruby red star gleaming within. And you see Ardell. Even though they are much larger, their head is currently buried into the chest of their lover. An astral elf with a slender yet muscular build. She has short white hair that is cut into a crescent, fanning out across the sides to points on her cheeks. Feathers and plumage fan from her neck and arms, with speckles of gold within the feathers. She's adorned in similar robes as the others, but hers take on brighter colors with the symbolism of the sun surrounded by the clouds that dither towards the bottom. Ardell, you would know to have been a hunter, a protector of your people. Yubel, being a craftsperson, working on pretty much everything you've ever owned, all the small tools, all the bits of pottery you've cherished and used to storage. You see them holding each other tightly.
Hello, you both.
As you greet them, as you go to say hi, you see, as they do not respond, you walk further in, your shadow becoming long as the orange flame flickers in the lantern. It blows out, leaving you in cold darkness.
Huh?
You see, as Yubel and Ardell hold on to each other, tears rolling down their face, somber and solemn. Their tears run from clear, then spill to a gold. Ichor drips from their cheeks as it floods between the crevices of their bodies. Their skin beginning to become paler, ivory white. Like clay, they meld into each other, sticking together. You see, as Ardell melts uniform into the body of Yubel, you see their faces forever looking into each other's eyes, golden and shining, like hot flaming suns. Their mouths disappear, sealed shut like the melting wax of a candle. Wings that were tucked into their bodies rip outwards, spilling gold. You see them hugging each other, four sets of arms, one body. The imprints of their bodies engraved into each other. As they both cry an endless amount of ichor. as you look into them, shocked, scared. Stella, what do you do? As you see this figure begin to stand up.
I instantly drop the gifts to the floor. And I start backing away.
You back up. The open air hits you, a cold chill, a mist. And you see the lovers begin to walk towards you. Their arms open. Four sets of wings springing from Ardell's back. Or I should say, its back. This angelic figure with an ethereal beauty. A body elongated, the figure of a ballroom dancer. It walks towards you with a grace, each step making it get ever closer than any amount of backtracking can let you. And you see as the lovers open their arms and their wings. With one more step, they are right in front of you, their wings gleaming. Stella, what do you do?
I let out a shriek.
You scream as loud as you can. Your fear immediately sends the village into harrow. You see as multiple star druids, everyone in town, begins to exit their tents. You see as the lovers inch closer to you. And Stella, roll me initiative.
Oh, goodness. Oh, okay. Oh, that's a three.
That makes sense. Stella, as the lovers looks into you, they stare at you. They reach in for a hug. The people that you have known, the people that you've known to love each other with such an intensity, people that you wished you could be, look at you with a gaze of beauty, but with no legible emotion. And as you utter their names, you hear thud, 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 thud. Bumps. The sound of running. From behind you, getting closer.
I turn around.
You turn around, and you see a shadow looming over you. Then one last thud, and a giant slam in the ground. The clinking of metal. And you hear,
"Ha! I knew I would find worthy prey here. Don't worry, fair lady. Arkos Pharaoh is here to protect you."
And you see a large Leonin man with a messy and mangled mane tightly woven between the sea of swirling hair. Fanning out from his lower back are two large angel wings. Between them, a thin tail that, with a following feathery ball. He has sharp and angular golden eyes that you can see from the side, and a slit running down the middle. A black off-shoulder coat flows from beneath his mane with a red interior. He wears a turtleneck, and beneath the undercoat is a red jewel bearing a striking symbol in the middle of it. He brandishes a great sword, and with a single hand, its broad face is broken into three separate pieces.
It looks like my feelings were just right.
And that is going to start with the Star Druid's turns. You see the people around you, your family, the people that you've grown up around. On initiative 20, the Star Druids are going to launch a group attack. Their combined cosmic magic weaving chains that hold the lovers back. You see, they all stand in a circle around the lovers, interlocking their hands. And from the two endpoints, each of the druids, your mother and your father, holding out their hands. And you see starlight chains wrap around the lovers and hold them shut. And you hear your father,
Stella, move away from there quick.
And as these starlight chains bind the lovers, that is going to go to Arkos's turn. And you see Arkos walks over to the lovers with a look in his eye of sheer jubilance. And you see as the druids hold him down, as they hold the lovers down, you see as Arkos is going to take two great sword slashes with one singular hand at the lovers. That's a 24 to hit.
Oh.
And 11 to hit. So he misses one strike as he is going to land the first. And that is going to be 21 damage to the lovers. You see their wings are bound with chains that are stricken through the feather. Golden ichor bleeds from them. But you hear no scream, no sound. And Arkos goes,
Fell beast, you may have evaded one of my attacks, but you will not be so lucky next time.
And that is going to go to the lover's turn, who is going to retaliate with disadvantage.
Oh my god.
That is going to be a 21, which is absolutely going to hit Arkos. And they are going to deal 11 damage to Arkos. And that is going to be the end of the lovers. Oh, wait. No, they totally have another attack. Whoopsies. They're going to make another attack with disadvantage. That is going to miss with a 10. And one last attack. You see as the angels on this angel unleashes two winged attacks, spilling tears as they do. And then for the last attack, they move slowly, the chains binding them, gripping them hard, their wings tearing free as they go to embrace Arkos. And they are going to do that with disadvantage. That is going to absolutely miss. Arkos moves to the side and plants his greatsword right at its neck. Stella, that is going to go to your turn.
I move away from the violence a little bit. You're not going to kill them, are you?
Of course! If I have to kill them. If I don't do it, who will? By the Guild of the Bloodletter, I will wipe these scoundrels from the face of the earth.
Our tradition. I kind of turn back towards my parents.
Your mother is looking sorrowful, sad. You know what she looks like when she's sad. But you see, because you are caught in the middle of this, they are not going to take any chances.
Oh.
Stella, I know of our tradition, but we cannot risk you getting hurt. Please at least get to the other side, but I don't think there's any convincing this man.
I nod and I move away.
You move closer to the boundary that the Star Druids have set up, this barrier of magic. And you are still inside of the dome. You cannot be let out because they are still trying to hold down the lovers with chains. And that is that the end of your turn, or are you going to do anything else?
I think I will... Arcos did get injured a bit, right?
Yes, Arcos did get injured.
Okay. I am going to use Healing Word on Arcos.
You cast Healing Word on Arcos. How much do you heal him for?
That is 6.
6? You heal him for 6 damage. You see as the wounds laced with the ichor begin to heal and close. You see Arcos looks back at you for a mere second and goes,
"Thank you, little lass. Much appreciated."
I nod back to him. I look very clearly worried about what's happening.
And that is going to go to the Star Druid's turn. So, now that we're on the second round, I will explain this combat a little bit more. On initiative 20, the Star Druids are going to continue holding their magical chains. And the Lovers is going to break out if they do not hit a high enough DC. Meanwhile, Arcos will be brawling with the main angel. And Stella, Noelle, you are going to have to roll me a D4 right now.
Oh, okay. D4. That is 4.
A 4. You see, as Arcos is holding them back, you see Arcos is letting out a relentless flurry of slashes, parrying blows and taking blows, while not letting the angel catch its breath. And the Star Druids are going to roll to keep this barrier up. I'm going to roll in front of everyone. The DC is going to be a DC 15 wisdom throw. If they can't beat a 15, it fails. That is going to be a 17. The angel is still kept within the chains. You see these stellar barriers, these chains, hold and lock on tighter as your mother and father pull at either end, making sure the lovers does not move. You see your father goes,
"Stella, we hold our traditions for reasons. But this time, I think we have both a threat that we cannot let go."
And as your father issues that warning, that is going to go to Arcos' turn. And Arcos is going to... You see, as his wings open up, these giant angelic wings on this huge lion man, you see they open up as wide as they can, and he slams them like he is about to take off for flight. Due to his heavy weight, he stays on the ground, and you see a giant typhoon of wind blow from his back. And you see it knocks over the TP of Ardell and Ubel. And they are going to make a strength saving throw.
Oh my god.
They are pretty good at this. But they are going to do it disadvantage because the druid succeeded. That's still a 20, which beats Arcos' attack. However, they are going to take half. That is still going to be 34 damage as this giant storm breaks through everything around Arcos and kicks up an unruly amount of dust.
So you withstood that. You're a worthy foe indeed. Oh, I can feel the chase. It's riling me up right now.
And Arcos lets out a hearty laugh, as that is going to be the end of his turn. And that is going to go to the lover's turn. You see, they are going to... they are going to launch two more attacks on Arcos with disadvantage. That's a 10 to hit. That does not hit. That is going to be a 13 to hit. That does not hit. And the last one does hit Arcos with a 21 to hit. And that is going to be 9 damage. And Arcos is going to need to succeed on a DC 18 Constitution saving throw. He is also pretty good at this, though. That's a 24. He succeeds. And you see as the lovers begin to hold him in an embrace, you see as Arcos belly laughs so heartily that he flexes them off of him.
Your strength is no match for me!
I'm almost impressed by how much fun he's having right now.
You, not once has this smile left his face.
Like, he does.
And that is going to be the end of the lover's turn. That is going to go to your turn, Stella. Anything you want to do?
I'm just going to keep healing Arcos.
You begin to heal Arcos a little bit more. As you go to heal him, you're using healing word, right?
Yes.
As you use healing word, you see past Arcos's shoulder. You see the faces of the lovers. Golden tears spilling down their face. And in flashes of that, you see how he looked when they were man, not beast. You see the faces of people that you smiled with, that ate with you, that shared tales, that even wove starlight with you.
Aww.
And that... how much are you going to heal Arcos for?
10.
You heal Arcos for 10, and...
Oh, the tapestry's on the floor.
The tapestries got blown away by the massive amount of wind. And they are not too far away, but they are laying there in the grass as Arcos is spilling golden blood and his own blood all over the floor.
Oh, goodness.
And that is the end of your turn, right, Stella?
Yes, I don't want to hurt them at all.
All right. We'll roll me a d4 as I roll for the Star Druids to make a wisdom check.
Another 4.
And that's a 24.
Ooh.
So once again, you see Arcos is holding back, parrying every single blow the lovers can even try to land, while also landing a few close grazes himself. And that is going to go to Arcos' turn. Arcos is continuing to lay on the hurt. You see, and I want to mention that as you are around Arcos, it almost feels like this jovial nature of his, this fun is almost infectious. And that is going to go to... I'm gonna let you know what it does so you know. While Arcos is around, you get a +1 to saving throws and skill checks.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
And that is going to go... He is so joyous. He is very happy. That is going to... He is going to roll to recharge his divine wing beat. It did not recharge. And he is going to, use a move called Heavenly Dance. You see as Arcos makes a series of graceful slashes with his sword. He is moving in tandem with the wings and the wind. You see light is reflected off of his blade as he lands a flurry of blows. I'm going to roll to hit. That is a 28 to hit. And that is going to be 20 damage. And you see as Arcos spills golden ichor all over his own blade. And that is going to be the end of Arcos's turn, as he is jovially destroying the lovers.
Oh, goodness. He's so happy.
And that is going to go to the lovers. They are going to now unleash a strong attack, and unfortunately, you are in the way, Stella.
Oh.
So make me a Constitution saving throw.
Okay, with a plus one, right?
With a plus one because Arcos is in front of
that's
you.
Not gonna oh, help.
Goodness
that's
God.
Six.
And that's a 25 from Arcos.
Oh, brother. One of us is a little more sturdier than the other.
Yeah. Arcos, as the angels unleash a devastating attack, you see tears begin to flood and solidify on their eyes. You see these delicate teardrops begin to float in the air, circling and forming strands of tears interlinked together. They sharpen at the ends. These bladed circular bars of ichor float and loom in the air, orbiting around the lovers. You see, they begin to slash at Arcos's body, ripping deep into it. And with a snap of their wings, as they raise high up into the air, gleaming with gold, you feel an overwhelming aura of love and loss. As their tears reach you, you feel disturbingly sad. But, Stella, before this attack reaches you, you see as Arcos jumps back in front of you, holds out his arms, and takes the full force of your attack for you.
No!
So he is going to take a combined damage of 36 and 36 halved. But Arcos takes a combined damage of 36 from your attack, Stella, and 18 more as he captures this whirling gold within his hands. As he compresses the ichor around, he looks back at you and goes,
"I will not let this beast harm a single hair on your head, and you can count on that."
And he gives you a very jovial smile as he leaps back towards the lovers. And, Stella, that's gonna be your turn.
Good lord, I don't know if it would be a good idea to get closer, but
worry not, young one. You need not heal me as much as you wish. Refrain. I am sturdy. As sturdy as I look.
I believe you. I'll use a second level. Yes, a second level healing word.
All right, and you're going to do that on Arcos?
Yes.
Absolutely. How much do you heal?
14.
14 health back to Arcos. He looks back and goes,
"Thank you very much."
And
is he going to thank me every time?
Absolutely.
Oh my god, I love him.
Chivalry is not dead. That is going to go to the Star Druid's turn. They're going to make the wisdom check. Remember, DC 15. 22, bro!
Oh my god!
They hold on tight. And that is going to go... they are going to... Oh, Stella, roll me my D4.
Oh, yes, okay. D4. A 1?
As you see the lovers, they raise their wings up to the heavens.
Oh, God.
Golden light begins to build up within them. The chains trying to drag them down to the ground. But their golden eyes look straight upwards. You see them gleam. You see a holy light glistening from their body. A holy beauty. And as you see their wings gleam, an angel that was roaming the skies lands on the battlefield in front of you, Stella. They land in front of you and behind Arkos, and they are going to go ahead and... Okay, they're just added to the initiative. You see this winged humanoid angel descends on the battlefield. Their body distorted in a beautiful doll-like way. They have slender features. They are lengthy and lanky, looking like a ballerina, gracefully touching down in front of you. Golden regalia decorates their limbs as they zero in on you, Stella.
Wonderful.
That is going to go to Arkos' turn. Arkos is going to try to recharge his Divine Wingbeat. Failed to recharge. He is going to make his two greatsword attacks then. 21 to hit, absolutely going to hit the lovers. And a 24 to hit, also hitting the lovers.
Oh my god.
That is going to be 13 damage plus 16 more damage. And that is going to be the end of Arkos' turn. And that is going to be the lovers' turn. They're going to attack Arkos three times with disadvantage. First one, miss. Second one, I think that does hit.
No.
Let's see. That is absolutely going to hit Arkos with the second attack. And the last attack is going to be with disadvantage as well. And that's a miss. So they hit Arkos one time for, that is going to be 5 damage. And that is going to be the end of the lover's turn. That is going to go to the angelic figure that landed before you, Stella. They are going to roll to hit. All right. That is absolutely going to hit you. That's a dirty 20.
Yep.
From that angel. Let me roll a d8. That is going to be 5 damage to you, Stella.
Okay.
Plus an additional 1 radiant damage.
Okay.
And that is going to be the end of its turn. That is going to go to your turn, Stella.
All right, I guess I'm in this now. I will use Shillelagh.
You cast Shillelagh. What are you carrying that you're casting Shillelagh on?
A quarterstaff.
All right, you hold out a wooden quarterstaff and you charge it and imbue it with your magic. What does your Shillelagh look like?
I kind of imagine it starts just like it becomes tinted in blue, and little speckles of starlight cover it.
Your quarterstaff shines with starlight as you raise it up and go to hit. Roll it.
Dirty 20.
Dirty 20. That is going to be how much damage? Because you're hitting.
That is 5 bludgeoning damage.
5 bludgeoning. Got you. All right. That is going to be the end of your turn, or you got anything else you want to do?
I think that's it.
All right. That is going to go to the Star Druid's turn. They are going to make their wisdom check to hold these chains. That is the first fail.
No.
You see, as the lovers begin to struggle out, your parents lose their grasp on these astral chains. And as it breaks, a whiplash sends through them and the other Star Druids, and they feel it. They recoil and fall prone for this round. And that is going to go to Arcos's turn. Oh, wait, actually, roll me that D4, Stella.
Okay. No!
Another exalted humanoid lands on the battlefield right before you.
Get out!
You see, it graces the floor, and it is now in the battle. That is going to be the end of that turn. That is going to go to Arcos's turn. Arcos is going to charge up his Divine Wingbeat. He recharges it. Perfect timing.
Oh.
You see as Arcos is going to run to the side, take an opportunity attack from the lovers. And that is going to not hit him. Arcos then roars loudly as his wings snap to the back. They reach the center point of his back, and they whoosh forward, sending a shockwave of wind. And I'm going to make a saving throw for them. Failed. And they are going to take the full brunt of that damage. And Arcos does this all while avoiding you, Stella.
Oh.
That is going to be 38 damage to both of them. You see as Arcos is the mere wind from this blast of just sheer power and muscle blows both of these angels, these exalted, into the floor. They slam their heads back against the ground. You hear a sickening snap as golden ichor bleeds across the land, and they are sent tumbling further past all of the Star Druids.
Oh my god.
And that is going to be the end of Arcos' turn. And that is going to go to the lover's turn. They are going to move closer to Arcos. You see, as they crouch down, leap forwards towards him, and they're going to make their 3 attacks without disadvantage. First one, miss. Second one, miss. Third one, hit. That is going to be 5 damage. And Arcos is going to have to make a constitution saving throw. And that is absolutely a success with 21 to succeed. And that is the end of the lovers. That's up to you, Stella. You even see that your brother is beckoning at you to get the fuck out of there.
I think I'm just gonna run.
You jump out of this battle that is too big for you to follow. You see, as you get out of this circle, the Star Druids are going to try to continue to help Arcos. They are going to honor the wishes of their deceased. You see, as the Star Druids, instead of wrapping astral chains around the lovers, they're going to wrap it around Arcos. Unless you say otherwise, but you see that they are going to do this. They're going to pull Arcos away from this because they are going to honor their traditions.
I don't know if there will be any restraining that man.
You see your brother, Versailles, immediately agrees.
Listen, I think we should just help him out. I know it's against our traditions and all, but good lord, I don't think we're holding that guy.
Do you want to make a persuasion with advantage?
Yes. Persuasion with advantage. That's a nat 20.
Holy shit. Yeah, your mother and father look at each other from across the battlefield. They know you're right, and they also know that this is probably a threat that they shouldn't leave out in the world. Stella, as you are out of the battle begins to look much quicker to you. It is almost a blurred vision, a tornado of violence and golden blood and ichor spilling across the lands. And you see as Arcos and the lovers have an intense back and forth. And as this battle progresses, as it is going on, I'm going to roll two things. All right. You see that Arcos is overpowering the lovers. The Star Druids all conjoin their power to form these astral binding chains, holding the lovers down. For the rest of the combat, you see this is pretty much handled. But as you look into the battlefield, you see as the lovers are just shedding tears, the battle becomes horrendously one-sided. Golden ichor spills wildly out of their body, drenching their ivory skin in gold, slowly overtaking them. They form weapons, but Arcos shatters them just as quickly. Heaving slashes, heavy blows. The lovers turn. They look anywhere but the battle. Yet they still fight.
Aww.
Like puppets on a string. As you look onwards, you see their faces once again flickering from memories to reality. From just the other day, you hearing Ardell say,
"Even though we've spent 15 long years together, I wish I had met you, Belle, so much earlier. How I wish we could have spent even a century together."
Oh.
By the campfire another day, you hear Belle talking to you jovially, with a glimmer of sadness in their eyes. As they look across the flickering flame, you follow their gaze, and they look cheerfully at Ardell, smiling and enjoying life. These two faces, finding solace yet sorrow in this. Now, back to reality, their ivory faces, if you could even consider them faces, look like masks, shedding a cacophony, a downpour of tears that drench the land in gold. Their bodies becoming ragged, limp, cut apart and torn. You look into Arcos's face and you see, after that attack where all of their emotions flooded into his, while he tries to keep a bravado, you see that smile flickering between a frown as tears well up in his eyes.
I think I think Stella would start to tear up too.
As all of these tears drench the land, as you feel them pitter down your face, sliding down your chin, Arcos lands one final blow. You see, he slams the great sword through their chest, through their hearts. On the end of his blade, you see their hearts. They have woven into one. Eternal love, eternal beauty. As the last drop of ichor spills from it, as the beats fade into nothing, you see, as Arcos pulls his sword back, as he catches the heart in one hand and their bodies in the other,
I knew not what you have been through. You are not prey, and that is a lesson I've forgotten. Thank you for the reminder, you beautiful souls, you.
And Arcos puts them onto the floor delicately. And you see as their bodies lay limp, then crack. They crack slowly, the golden ichor overtaking slowly as their entire body shatters into thousands of glimmering golden sparkles that drench the night sky, joining with the stars. And you see Arcos stands back up solemnly, his black coat waving within the brisk night wind. You see as your father is the first to get up from the grass, his body aching with pain, and you can see it. And you know your father. His eyes do not open, because he's seen this already. He takes Arcos and pulls him over to the tent. And as the night calms down, as the tears can only stop, as however long it takes you to recompose, you see as your mother calls to you. Stella, did you return anywhere or go anywhere while you were trying to process what you had seen?
I think I would go to pick up the tapestry and the poem that I was going to give them, if I can find them.
You go to pick them up, and you see as your mother puts a hand on your shoulder and shakes her head. Stella, these are gifts, remember? We cannot take back what we have given. Even though they are lost, these are still theirs.
It's okay. I wasn't going to take them back. Just make sure they don't get lost in the wind somewhere.
Oh, very well. How about we set something up together?
That sounds wonderful.
you and your mother go to set up something to keep these from blowing in the wind. What do you do to prevent them from moving from the spot that they were meant to be?
For the tapestry, I was thinking of maybe like tying it to a tree branch so it's like it's just hanging.
You take the tapestry that you made, you tie it to the tree that was nearest to their teepee, where they had spent their final moments embracing. It blows in the wind, the leaves bristling, and the gemstones engraved from that fiery night sky, a testament to the passion of their love. And also the fleeting amount of time that you have.
As for the poem,
how about we leave them under a rock where they were, where they took their final breath?
Good idea.
You and your mother prepare a small but meaningful gravestone. And together, you both put the belongings that the villagers and you had made for them. Do you say any last words?
Thank you both for everything you've done. I'm sorry things had to end this way. May the stars guide you.
As you say, may the stars guide you, reflected in the waters nearby, you see, out of the corner of your eye, one star gleam a little brighter than all the rest.
Oh.
Now come, Stella. We must get going.
All right.
Your father wants you for something. All right.
I give my mom a little hug before going to see my dad.
You give your mother a tight hug and she hugs you so tightly back. She pats your head a little. And as you even try to pull away just a little bit, she continues to hold you in her arms.
Oh.
And after quite a while, she lets go. And you see as she looks away to not face you as you walk over to your home.
I kind of step in. Mother said you wanted me for something.
You walk inwards, and you see Arcos is sitting across from your father, and there is an open pillow sitting right next to Arcos. And your father gestures for you to take a seat.
I take a seat.
Stella, the final days of your travels with us have come. As the stars demand, it is time for you to take bigger steps in the world. And I am not one to stop you.
Oh. So it's finally happening.
Your father nods, his eyes ever so shut. But for a moment, he looks at you with his eyes open, just the smallest amount, and you see glimmering within them the most beautiful cosmic array you have ever seen.
Do great things, my daughter. I am so proud of you.
And he shuts his eyes.
I give him a smile and I just go in for like a really big hug.
Before you even go for a hug, he opens his arms.
Oh.
And he gives you a hug and pats Papa. His little girl on the head. And you see, as you release from the hug, which lasts just the right amount, almost as if your father has predicted when it was going to end. And you see Arcos sitting there with his... He's just sobbing.
Oh.
You have a beautiful, beautiful family dynamic. Your culture is so pretty. Oh! How I wish to have been loved like this. Oh.
Do you need a hug too?
Yes!
You hug Arcos and he squeezes you really tightly, and you see that he has a little tapestry that your father has given to him as a gift wrapped around his forehead.
Around his forehead.
Yeah. And Arcos lets go. And you see him sniffling and, like, snot dripping down his nose a little.
Your beautiful culture has overwhelmed me. No. Oh, I've never seen something so beautiful before.
That's
so loving, so tender, so caring. Oh!
Considering changing his whole entire thing.
Yeah. But either way, I was told that your father wants me to take you on an adventure. If you are all right with that. But he won't take no for an answer.
An adventure?
It seems the stars of your culture have deemed you ready for what is known as the Blood Letters, the organization from which I hail.
I see. Well, that is where I must go, then. That's where I'll be headed.
Oh, how beautiful! It seems you will play a bigger role in this world. Oh,
no
and I
pressure.
Hope I will too. Oh,
you've already played a very big role today.
Great!
He smiles, and you see his tail like wagging rapidly no! behind him.
Too precious. I can't.
He's so cute. I'm giving him a pat on the back.
You pat him on the back and Arcos is just sobbing. You see just tears rolling down his eyes. He is so touched from what he's witnessed here.
He's I love how quick he's switching from emotions.
Oh, anyway, we should head out. I am supposed to meet some comrades of mine. I got lost from them, and we should really head back to where I'm supposed to meet them.
Ah, you got lost from them.
Yeah, I was running away from them as fast as I can because I saw threats. So I went to go chase down the enemy.
I guess it truly was the stars that brought you here.
Oh yeah, that was like a night ago. I've been running for a whole day.
Wow, that's quite impressive.
Nah, well, I'm glad that I've found a new purpose and a reminder of I have to go meet those guys. Let us go.
All right, let us go then.
Pack up and say your farewells if you must. I will be right outside.
All right.
As you turn away, you hear him go, "Where am I meeting them again?"
Oh, Lord.
Never let him go.
I don't want to let him go. I'm attached. All right. Stella kind of just stands there for a second, just like taking all of the information in. This is surreal, to say the least. I'm excited and a little nervous at the same time.
As you take it all in, and you feel the excitement and the wonder and the knowing that this is what you've been waiting for so long, you can't help but be excited. And do you want to go through your goodbyes?
Yes.
All right. Who do you go to first?
I think I'll go through everyone else before saying goodbye to my parents.
All right. So you want to start with the nearest teepee then?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You head to the teepee of Terrace, a young adult astral elf around your age. They have rounded ears that point outwards at the very tip. The stars speckle in them like freckles. He has black hair with small strands of white intermingling with them. His skin is cracking with golden ichor, and these cracks run down his face, further down his body. He's wearing a turtleneck that has sleeves that are cut out, and a long starry robe. And he just goes, "Oh, Stella. Hi, what's going on?"
Well, it seems adventure calls, and I must be going.
Ah, that'll be a pity to miss you, but I'm sure we'll meet again, under the stars.
We will, I'm sure of it.
He gives you a nod and gives you a tight hug.
I'll be seeing you.
As will I. We need two to see each other, after all.
And he gives a smile.
That is true.
All right, then you are going to head to Corey?
Yes.
You see that Corey is also in the same tent. These two are siblings. You see that... you see an astral elf with long black hair that is silky and straight. Their faces porcelain white without imperfection. They have long black and white eyelashes, bearing one yellow eye that is swirling within a black sclera, and one eye that is green in hue. She is wearing a dress that covers the right half of her body, while the left is out and covered in silvery jewelry. Her dress is layered, with the top half puffing out and covering the lower, whilst being speckled in gems that shine like the stars. And she goes, "Ah, Stelle, what's up?"
I'll have to be leaving for quite some time.
Oh, you're leaving already?
Yes, it seems the time has come.
Oh, well, that's good. You've been prattling about that destiny thing for so long now. Yapping about it. Like, yeah, girl, you're the one with the destiny.
Jesus.
Well, you know.
She flicks you on the forehead. Take a joke.
Sorry to see you go.
Yes, but I'm sure we'll see each other again.
Don't let all that fame get to your head. I hope it's fame, at least. Would it be bad if your journey ended in tragedy?
Oh, don't say that.
Sorry.
I'll try to make sure it doesn't.
Terrace looks over. Even at goodbye, you can't stop with the morbid jokes. Sorry, it's like my thing. Okay, bye. And she gives you a one-arm hug.
Oh. Goodbye, Corey.
You go to a cast. A lot of these, I'm gonna have us like speed through them a little bit because you don't know them a little too well.
Yeah.
Like, you know them, you've hung out with them, but not too much.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You say your farewells to Kip and Coburn. They're both hanging out and getting to know each other by the fire. And that leaves your family.
Yes. I feel like I need to get them all together or something. If they're not already all together.
Yeah, I think at this point your mother is returning back to the main teepee. You see her eyes are puffy.
No.
And nearly like swollen shut.
Oh. I head into the teepee.
You head into the teepee and they all look at you. And your father says,
"I suppose this is it for the time being."
Yes. This is goodbye for now.
Worry not. Under the stars, I have already seen us meeting again.
Good. I am already awaiting that day to come.
As am I.
And you see your dad smiles. A rare face on him. You see your mother with a face that is now restreaming with tears. You saw there was dried tears and now there's more tears. And she hugs you very tightly before you can even say a word to her.
Can you write letters, please?
Of course. Of course I will.
I hear in the gutter towns they have those letters that can just out of existence and then come back to you. Can you please write a couple to us?
Of course I will. I can never
and
forget.
She gives you three smooches, increasingly getting longer across your forehead.
miss you all so much. Including you, Versailles.
I was waiting. But yes. I knew it was coming. And he gives you a little wink.
Since you couldn't say it first.
Well, why would I? You're the one who's leaving.
What? You can't say something to your dear old sister.
You've always been the talkative one here. But if you insist... Come back soon, sis. I can only see so far into the future. I'm sure Dad's seen it all already. But all...
And you see he, like, looks to the side and he just, like, puts his... Like, he puts a hand on his bangs and begins to fiddle with them.
I'll miss you.
Oh, I'll miss you so much too, Versailles. I ruffle his hair.
Get out.
Yo, get going. Saying I'm giving words. You the boot.
No, I won't.
And you see, Stella, as you begin to walk out after saying all your goodbyes, Arcos is standing watch, and you packed your bags, you hold them tight, and Arcos and you proceed outwards with all your goodbyes now in the wind, in the stars. As you look out over the horizon, a new adventure waits for you. That is where we will end session one, part one. And I hope all of you listeners will join us on the next one.
Yay! Yippee!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the end of episode one. It's like episode one, part one, but in reality, we're just breaking it up into full separate parts. I hope you all enjoyed, and thank you for listening. These first... four-ish episodes were all meant to be two episodes, but I broke them down for time's sake. However, I hope you enjoy and continue to listen to my work. Our work.
Ours. Our.